Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to Scanline Media's 2021 Gimmick Awards. This is our Game of the Year and Other of the Year celebration. We have 15 categories in which we're going to be awarding some friends some awards. And today, we're going to be tackling the Best Surprise. I'm Six Detmar.
I'm Jennifer Unkle.
I'm Currier Page.
And we have here a list of games that we found to be good, you know, pleasant surprises in 2021. And we are looking for one winner and two, possibly more, runners-up, but probably two. Jen, could you lay down the law for us?
Sure thing. So for Best Surprise, we have Final Fantasy VII, The First Soldier, Super Robot Wars 30, Bowser's Fury, GBO2 Operation Code Fairy, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Currier did it again.
I did, huh?
It's just Code Fairy.
Okay.
Okay. GBO2 Code Fairy, then Guardians of the Galaxy, then Power Rangers Battle for the Grid Super Edition, Nosha, Inscription, Overboard, Petal Crash, and Toho Lunanites.
Toho.
All right. I can just real quick, I can strike one from the list real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll go ahead and strike off Power Rangers Battle for the Grid Super Edition. I just mostly wanted to shout them out because it was, I mean, one, it's a repackaging of the base game with all the DLC had caught up to that point. But it was just really nice to see that game come out with like all the DLC and costumes and then basically say, oh, we're still supporting this thing. It was surprising that a game that is, like, at this point 3 years old, I think, still getting active development and new characters. Like, they were straight up polling people on their Twitter, like, recently being like, hey, are there other Rangers or characters you want on this roster? Like, they, you know, very clearly are listening to their base and they're adding, like, fun, interesting characters. They're making, you know, weird pulls during the seasons, but, you know, that's cool. And then, you know, I'm just glad that it is still continuing development and you're still, like, able to buy, like, you know, a relatively new version of this game. It's a really good jumping on point for people who want to play, you know, Battle for the Grid, which I still find to be a really solid, fun fighting game.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with their support, for sure.
Yeah, like, it's been really cool, and again, like, it's no small feat that they were able to, you know, get certain voice actors back. Like, the game didn't even start with voice acting, interestingly enough, but then they got, like, they added in voice acting, they added in extra costumes, they've done a lot of interesting work with Battle for the Grid. So, I just want, like, it was a little surprising, but I was more like, oh, that's good, I'm glad it's still getting development, so... That was about it.
I feel like I can cut Super Robot Wars 30. It's very surprising that we got a Super Robot Wars game here, given the rights nightmare that those games are.
Have you ever seen a picture of the Switch cartridge for Super Robot Wars 30?
Uh-huh.
It's so fucking funny because, like, the Switch cartridge is already really small, about the size of an SD card, but most of the label on that is taken up by nothing but copyrights, and the logo for Super Robot Wars 30 is just this itty-bitty thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just been such a rights nightmare that the fact that they were able to get it out over here intact is really great. However, the game itself is, I mean, from what I've played, it's a pretty good Super Robot Wars, but it's just a Super Robot Wars, so the game itself is not that surprising, just the fact that it was able to come here at all.
Right. I mean, the main appeal of a Super Robot Wars game in general is just, you know, here are these, you know, robots from series that you like fighting in one game, you know, and you see some really gorgeous sprite animation with it. Like, that's kind of the thing that's defined Super Robot Wars, but you're right, it's the, like, I think this marks the 30th anniversary of the series, and not the 30th game, but 30th anniversary. Distinction. But it is really cool that for once, it's not just we're getting a Super Robot Wars game and, you know, in the West. It is specifically a Super Robot Wars game that isn't just full of original robot designs. We're talking, like, lots of licensed bots are in this game.
Yeah, and that's one of the drawbacks, because, like, in order to have the full experience, you have to pay $90, just because, like, the way that they managed to get all these... The way they managed to release one of these games over here is, like, okay, we're going to have the base thing here, and then if you want all of the stuff that was a little too expensive to to put in as normal, you have to buy this $30 pack or just buy the $105 package together.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way it's separated out is unfortunate, but, you know, I think deeply understandable. And game, I haven't been using that DLC, and it's like, I'll probably get it at some point. But I've been like, that's $30 just for that music. I don't care that much. And it's been a totally enjoyable experience without it. It still plays plenty of tribute to the shows without needing the music.
Didn't they just release an Ultraman pack for that game? Like, that's, like, I know, like, Ultraman isn't really, like, a, you know, Super Robot series. Sometimes Ultraman's a
Ultraman has robots in it.
I know, Jen. I'm just saying this. We can't get into Ultraman lore at this moment.
And you know what Super Robot Wars is, Jen. It's like, it would be weird if iRobot was in this game. Just because it says Super Robot doesn't mean any kind of robot makes sense in it. You're not gonna see any fucking Boston Dynamics in here.
If iRobot was in there, just like the catchphrase, "I did not murder him," as you blow up a giant mech.
That'd be all right. But yeah, that's Super Robot Wars 30. You know, it's all right.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So are we strictly sticking to games that came out in 2021?
No.
Okay.
Not necessarily. What are you thinking?
I was gonna, like, examine Toho Luna Knights for a moment, just because, like, that game came out in 2019, technically, and,
I mean, you know, we haven't featured it on awards before, and it had major updates in 2021. By our rules, it counts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if it, like, the reason I put Battle for the Grid on there, even though that's a 3-year-old game, it had a significant revision in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So if Toho Luna Knights got, like, a significant revision, like, even if it didn't, if we had just discovered it this year and we were surprised by it, I think it counts, but, you know.
I mean, if you want to cut it because you think it's less relevant, I understand, and I could allow that. I picked it up because a friend of ours, Ryan, was saying good things, and Ryan was just, you know, poking around Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I, even with Ryan's positive words, I know Ryan's also a person that spent, like, hundreds of hours on Kingdom Hearts 3. I don't always trust Ryan's judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Love you, buddy. And so I was just like, I mean, sure, Ryan's saying that's enough to make me curious. And I was like, this is a really cool roguelike. Like, this is, like, really sick, and or not rogue, sorry, Metroidvania is what I meant to say. That's, it's not a roguelike. But, like, the time stop powers and stuff in that are so interestingly added that it's just, like, as far as just playing it, one of the most fun straight up to play Metroidvanias I've ever touched.
Okay, I'm fine with keeping it then, because, like, I wasn't aware that you had played it as well. Like, it's something I played, I think, in 2020, back when it first got added to Game Pass, but I was not aware that they had done a giant update last year.
I mean, they added a new boss. I don't know how giant it is, but, you know.
What was it, another character, or was it...
Yeah, I think it's another classic Toho character who's in as a boss.
Okay, all right.
Okay. I mean... Again, if we want to say that it's less relevant, honestly, I would be okay being like, hey, I gave it its props if it were more valid to 2021. If you feel better with that, that's okay.
I'm fine keeping it for now. Yeah, it's
okay. Yeah. At least for now, we'll see. You know what?
We'll see where it goes. I could probably argue for a few of these going over Luna Knights, but I think we can keep it for now. Like, I don't think we're at that stage yet.
Yeah, for sure.
No show would be a better surprise if it didn't turn into what it turned into.
Yeah, like, Nosha is more surprising that this it started as a PSP mini game in Japan, and it got, like, a new, like, release and translation on the Switch in 2021. And it is generally, like, it's such a cool concept for a game. Like, you know, it is combining visual novel elements with a procedurally generated werewolf game, and that's pretty cool, except the problem where its entire premise kind of buckles under its own weight after a while, where you start seeing the same dialogue start cropping up.
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically, like, I mean, you see some of the same dialogue. They put in some good ways to avoid that, well, sort of like the, you know, like find new dialogue in the setup button that you unlock, where it's like, when you're picking, like, how many people, what roles are present, customizing the game, you can press a button, be like, hey, set it to something that is likely to pull up dialogue I haven't seen before, basically, which is a great feature.
Sure.
For me, the real problem is that seeing new content and progressing in the game is dependent on RNG, on a dice roll, and it's also a dice roll that takes about 20 minutes every time.
Yeah.
And so I've gotten bad rolls like 5 times in a row, and that's an hour of my life where I'm just reading the same dialogue over and over, and then randomly someone says, I think we should shove Frizz at 6 out the fucking into a locker for the rest of eternity. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, sure, why not, and I haven't done anything wrong, and it just happens, and it's like, okay, well, all right, I guess that was a waste of time.
Yeah, this game also, like, they went back to it later and they patched some of this out, but like, it had some really unfortunate language around its non-binary characters, and also, like, I'm not a huge fan of the guy who has, like, a cat sticking out of his neck, and he's like, well, I identify as a cat. It feels like it's skirting, if not entirely crossing a line that is pretty shitty towards queer people.
The cat one, I think, is a little unfair of you. As you explore that one, basically the process is he is going to be a cat, and part of the process is having that plugged in so he gets used to, like, has his brain wired up and gets used to a cat body. Mm-hmm. In the future, he will not have a human body. He will just have that cat body.
Okay.
This is a step in the process.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just one of those things that, like, yeah, it's kind of cool to have your procedurally generated werewolf game with, like, really, like, I love the character designs, like, some of the dialogue is really good, but the problem is that at a certain point when playing this, I'd much rather play a game that's much more authored and much more interesting, like Raging Loop.
We need to go back to Raging Loop. We never finished that.
We never finished it, but God, Raging Loop is such a fucking cool game. Like, we spent hours just playing the first loop of that game, and it is so gripping and compelling, and we dropped it at some point because, you know, life happened, but man, like, Raging Loop as, like, a sort of, like, it's similarly, it's on the Switch, it's on other platforms, but it's just a pure visual novel. You still get choices, and you go back to certain time loops to, like, do different things, but there's no randomness at all. It's, like, the only randomness is, or not even randomness, it's like you make choices in dialogue to get certain options and endings. And at a certain point, like I said, after playing Nosha, even for an hour, you start seeing, like, repeated dialogues and stuff. And it's like, I you'd much rather play a much more authored experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I just generally think, on the other side, I think it's a good surprise in terms of, like, preservation of game. Like, I think Nosha is interesting enough to be played and experienced on some level, but it doesn't make the top of this list.
Yeah, it is something, yeah, I want to go back to at some point just to see more of it, but yeah.
Yeah. I can also give another cut real quick. Bowser's mm-hmm. Fury. So when Super Mario 3D World, one of the best, you know, Mario platformers ever made, got ported to Switch, you also saw this, like, there was, like, a sticker or whatever on the, like, box art that's saying, like, oh, also included Bowser's Fury. And it's like, what the hell is Bowser's Fury? And it turns out they basically built a short, like, little, like, game in a I assume the Odyssey engine or whatever, but like more closely hewing to like Super Mario 3D World style gameplay. But it's a, you know, open world type thing. You can take challenges in any direction. There's no like, there's not even like a level select, like as you saw in, you know, Odyssey. You're mostly like fast traveling to different points on the map, or just getting on a, what's the name of the cute like dinosaur that you
Plessy?
Plessy, yes. You can ride on Plessy for a while, get around the places and go on little challenges. I don't know. I thought it was cute. I thought it was pretty cool. But it was just kind of a stark reminder of how much I didn't like Super Mario Odyssey. And it was like, oh, Bowser's Fury is actually kind of cool and yeah. fun. I don't know if I...
It was
go ahead.
Quite the surprise.
Yes. That they...
It was very unexpected that they just included... I mean, whatever side, that they just included a new Mario game in with their remaster.
Yeah. I guess for me, like... The parts where it falls flat are like, I feel like the whole Fury mechanic is not well timed or well done, because like it can happen while you're in the middle of doing something, and it can kind of, depending on what kind of goal you're going for, it can make it impossible to complete until you wait it out or you go and take care of Bowser, like unless you have the amiibo that like turns the mode on or off. It can be a situation where it's just interrupting your flow mid game, and I was not a big fan of that.
It was kind of neat though that the way they signify that like Bowser's about to show up in the middle of this like sea, ocean, lake thing that most of the game takes place in, like you start hearing like, you know, the rain starts calming down, and then you start hearing this like chugging guitar, and then you hear this like pretty okay like fucking metal riff like play while like Bowser, this giant demonic looking Bowser, starts flinging fireballs at you.
It's pretty good.
It's very you don't think of like rip roaring metal guitars as part of, you know, Mario. So it's a little surprising there. It's a lot of fun, but you know, as a fun little side thing, it's just nice to have it there. You know, the main attraction, of course, is Super Mario 3D World proper. But it was cool to see. But I don't think, like, looking at the list right now, I see others on this list I'd rather take over Bowser's Fury.
Yeah, and also, I just, one more slight condemnation, which is, there were, like, instances, I had at least one instance in particular where I had one thing left to do in the area, which required, you know, Fury mode or whatever, Fury O'Clock. And so I hung out there and waited, and Bowser went Fury, and I stood in front of it, and he needed to hit it with like a, you know, like shoot a breath of fire or something, and I step aside and he hits it, and he just didn't do that, and then it ended. And I was like, great. Great mechanic, y'all.
Great mechanic. But obviously, I don't know if it's necessarily experimental or whatever, but it was fairly clear that, like, this, you know, they had developed, like, you know, they developed the Odyssey engine, and they were like, well, we should probably fucking do something with this, because...
What if we were able to create a good game with this before we...
Yeah, who knew? but yeah, we cut Bowser's Fury, I think.
Okay. I'm torn. I'll ask Jen what she thinks here. I think the announcement of Coat Fairy was pretty surprising to me, but the actual game is kind of what I expected.
Yeah, it was more or less what I was thinking about going in. Like, it was a bit surprising just to the degree it made it feel like a TV show, and also like the whole thing where it's like, I think they announced it and then it came out like a month after they announced it. That was kind of surprising, but overall it's a situation where it's just a really solid mech campaign game. That's something that we don't really get all the time, and it's pretty great, but once you see it, you kind of know what it is.
Yeah,
it's like, it's ostensibly, from what I've gleaned from it, it's a Gundam story, you know, as told through like GBO2's engine.
Mm-hmm.
It has some, like, pretty nice cutscenes, though. Like, I like the look of it. I think they do enough to, like, make it visually stand out against just standard GBO2. But, yeah.
I also want to, I'll cut, but I want to give a shout out to Petal Crash. Petal Crash is not a 2021 game, though it had its big, like, now it has net play in 2021, which is
rollback. Big enough.
Yeah, certainly big enough to make it qualify. The main thing about Petal Crash is, I mean, I think I've talked with y'all about this. I don't know if I've talked about this on a podcast, but there are a couple of, like, nucleic styles of puzzle game, mm-hmm. right? There's sort of the Puyo Puyo style. There's the Tetris style. There are a few others like that, right? And then you see other ones that are kind of like riffing on these ideas. Like, I would also say like Puzzle Fighter is one of those mm-hmm. nucleic ones. And then you've got like Lumines, which is kind of like a variant on Puzzle Fighter. Or you've got like, you know, Yoshi's Cookie, which is a variant on Puyo Puyo. You know, you have these like Tetris. Spins on those ideas.
Then, of course, Match 3 with like, you know, Tetris Attack, or now it's just called Puzzle League. But the thing that sets Petal Crash apart is its mechanics.
It's a new one. Mm-hmm. It's not like Tetris but this, or Puyo Puyo but this. It's a new style of puzzle, of nucleic fundamental puzzle. And I was just flabbergasted playing it, of like, this is elegant. This is fun. This is simple. This is straightforward. And no one has ever done this before. It felt like realizing there was a fourth option in rock, paper, scissors. You're like, shit, how did no one ever do this before?
Feels like it's cheating.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I don't want to cut it. I don't know. I was just so flabbergasted.
I think if nothing else, it is cool to see something like that show up. I think it's just really cool to see, like, the evolution of the puzzle genre. Like,
mm-hmm.
When you put it like that, I feel like it might deserve a place on this list more than Toho. But,
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. It's also more relevant to this year than Toho.
Right. Again, the Battle Crash Online being the big thing, you know, having rollback netcode as well. Like, which is, hell, if puzzle games could get on this standard, you know,
more the, things. The puzzle game standard.
The puzzle game standard, yes. Can you describe briefly, like, for the audience who may not know, like, what exactly about Petal Crash Online, like, what is its core mechanic?
So, basically, you're causing, Do you ever do the part in, like, a Pokemon game, the older Pokemon games, where you have the ice puzzles, where, like, you step and you keep moving in that direction until something stops you?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. What you are doing is you are trying to cause chain reactions with colors of blocks by sliding them into another, and it's the impact that causes the reaction. So let's say you have, like, it's a little hard to describe with words, but, like, it has to hit. If you slide something so that it lands next to a red, but it doesn't directly, like, slam into the red, there will no reaction will happen. But when you cause a combo, it causes a little, like, bang that causes anything adjacent to the combo to also go flying to trigger more chain reaction. It's really, really elegant.
Right. And it's not like a 2048 situation in which with 2048, you're moving every piece at the same time by manipulating. Basically, you think of it as, like, manipulating gravity in a way, but that's sliding every piece. It sounds like here mm-hmm. you are sliding individual contingent pieces on in the cardinal directions. Like, am I getting that right?
Yes, you have two buttons, which are, like, well, you have directions, you have push, which pushes an individual block, and then the direction you want to push it in, and then you have wait. Because if you wait, it's Petal Crash because the blocks are flowers, and if you wait, new ones will grow.
That sounds
and
really
those are
cool.
The only controls. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And you're right, like, even though I made comparisons to 2048, it's like, no one's really done a game like this. Like, you could kind of like say like Crossing Queue is like similar, but it sounds like they have like I tried playing Crossing Queue and it's an alright game, but I still have trouble like wrapping my head around like its concept. Like I think a great puzzle game like can very simply and elegantly show you the like its potential just by through mechanics alone, I think. And Petal Crash, I think, immediately has this sense of like you are pushing blocks into each other to cause chain reactions, and that's just one of those things that like you can observe and learn from and try yourself, and it's interesting. Yeah, I think Petal Crash will stay on this list for a little while.
I can't argue with it. I love that for Petal Crash.
The rest of these are real tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about First Soldier.
First Soldier is a game that should be complete dog shit.
Mm-hmm.
First Soldier is them announcing that, like, using leftover assets from the FF7 remake, because in classic Square fashion, they made too many assets and they needed to find some way to make it profitable. They're gonna throw together a phone battle royale about wishing you were Sephiroth. And it's so good. I don't understand. I don't know. Maybe with the company it should go, I guess, because there are just so many surprises on here. But First Soldier is another tossed off stupid Final Fantasy phone game that, if it ever gets put on a console, will be my favorite battle royale.
Yeah, and another thing that's surprising about it, like, based on your description and the little bit that I played of it so far, like, it just stacks systems on top of systems on top of systems in a way that should not work. Like, in addition to you fighting other people, you're going on quests and destroying monsters, and, like, during the December celebrations for Christmas and stuff, like, it had you decorating a Christmas tree, and despite having this intense, like, inability to, what seems like on the surface an inability to focus on the thing it's here to do, ends up being something that just kind of just layers and layers on top of everything else, and like, great, it's the whole greater than the sum of its parts, basically.
It's the harmony of, it's the secret of making something that's really heavily layered, whether it's a game or, you know, a work, some other work of media, or a food. Just make the layers simple and harmonious, right? Like, that's how it works, is the melee is very simple. You just swing the weapon, right? The magic is really simple. You just cast the spell. The monsters are simple. You just kill them and loot them. And so no individual part of it is so complex, but all of them together are this really, like, impressively synergistic experience. Yeah. And yeah, you do have to like find rare, during the Christmas event anyway, you had to find rare bags of ornaments and haul them to Christmas trees.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is something.
You can breed chocobos. You can, you know how there's a firing range in most of these games? Yeah. There's that here, but also there's a chocobo farm where you can go to, you know, feed your chocobos and give them different stats.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe Overboard goes?
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think Overboard is pretty cool. I remember listening to that Novel Not New episode on it. And Overboard is neat, right? But how is Overboard, like, this is what I'm posing, right? How is Overboard surprising, like, because of, like, Inkle Studios, like, pedigree of making interesting, like, story-based games, and also time-looping mechanics have been seen in other visual novels? Like, I'm just saying, what does Overboard do that really sets it apart and makes it a surprise?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is that, like, they just put it out. Like, they announced it, hey, we have this thing, and then they put it out. Like, it's like that situation where it's like, hey, my favorite developer, or like one of my favorite developers in terms of like interactive fiction, suddenly was like, oh, hey, here's this little treat for you we prepared. We probably worked on it for more time than you think, but we're just releasing it now. And that's something that still kind of gets me excited these days. Like, just the mm-hmm. fact that anyone can just announce and release a game on the same day and it'll make an impact. But
and that makes it kind of the definition of a surprise when they're just like, hi, here's this game. You can play it right now.
Yeah.
Sure. Sorry.
Well, the other thing is, mm-hmm. from the actual game, it is very surprising to work your way through the premise of a reverse murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I do still think it's probably the cut here, but, you know, it made it this far on the list for a reason, right?
Sure.
That's true.
Again, we're not saying that Overboard is, like, a bad game. It's just more like... Like, my counter to the idea of, like, things just being announced and dropped the same day is, like, yeah, that's still pretty cool when that happens, but we also live in the age of, like, digital distribution and such. Like, day and date announce and releases, like, I think used to be, like, a huge thing. Like, we went, like, things were mostly on, like, still physically released and early digital, like, stores and stuff. But nowadays, I've come to, like, I'm not as surprised by it anymore, I guess is what I'm saying.
I mean, it used to be suicidal. It used to be, like, you'd say, and it's out now, and then people would go to the store and couldn't get it. The fact that you can actually get it now doesn't change the fact that they have forsaken the normal process of, like, teasing something out and promoting it and hyping it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I do think it could go.
Yeah, I generally think of, like, of the things on this list, I think Overboard can be cut, personally.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
How many does that leave us?
Four.
That leaves us with a four right now. It's funny because I can't imagine... There is... pretty much nothing that could happen outside of someone like mandating we cover it for a podcast where I would play Guardians of the Galaxy, but I also can't imagine it not being on the top.
I don't think so either.
Like,
there was I remember vividly when we were on a Discord call and it was like E3 time and Square Enix spends like a fucking half hour, 45 minutes, whatever, talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. And it looks like the dumbest, stupidest bullshit you could ever imagine. It seems like the most vapid, most, like, cynical whatever-the-fuck thing. And it was like, oh, it's popular because it's a fucking Marvel thing. This was off the heels of Avengers, right? Where, like, their Avengers game was hot garbage, right? And so, and this was Guardians of the Galaxy. They had, you know... Not that I associate any weight to it, but, like, they didn't have any of the actors necessarily from the movie, which, I mean, certainly, like, regular Avengers didn't have that, but, like, still, it had so much going against it. The fact that Guardians of the Galaxy is as funny, charming, enjoyable to play, and as cool as it is an utter shock to me.
Yeah, like...
It's... Part of the shock is that I intellectually accept it, but in my gut, I still don't believe it.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, like, it was... not only was it an amazing surprise for me, it kind of checked me in a way, kind of like, hey, maybe you should give certain games a chance before writing them off entirely. Because, like, I was just mocking it all the time whenever it came up in previews and stuff like that. Like... When they first revealed that the decision tree is, like, just a photo of Star-Lord smiling, it was like, what the fuck is this? This looks terrible. But, yeah, once you get in there, like, it's one of the rare games where characters do not shut up, and the not shutting up actually works in its favor. Just, it does a fantastic job of pacing these characters' growth as you spend more time with them, or you get into... like little tiffs with one another, like the fact that at certain points when you piss off Rocket enough, he'll more or less just tell you to pound sand when you try and order him to do something to like get through a section. Like, that's some really good shit. And it's on top of all that, this is the rare game where that has a copyright mode that is almost better than actually playing it with all the licensed music turned on.
Oh yeah. Like, okay, so most of the time in these games, they have a streamer mode, right? Because we live in a fucking digital hellscape, right? And we had a pretty hilarious example, even last year, of Life is Strange True Colors.
Yeah, even Square Enix, same publisher.
Within the same company, right? Where you do, like, streamer mode for Life is Strange, like, True Colors, and they're doing this fucking air guitar, like, you know, kids rocking out to a song sequence to utter silence. And it is hilarious. But it's still bad. Guardians of the Galaxy took it one step further. They had already come up with, like, this fictional band that Star-Lord or Peter Quinn is into, right? Called, well, Star-Lord. It's, like, his namesake, like, his alternate identity, if you will, when he's with the Guardians. And they basically released an entire album of mid-80s power rock, like, not even, kind of metal-ish, kind of rock, whatever. Like, think, like, Motley Crue and Def Leppard on a bad day sort of, like, album. And I remember Jen and I was taking a drive, and we just listened to the entire album. And my first, like, instinct listening to this was, like, and I mean this in the most positive way possible, this sounds like a shitty 80s rock band. Like, but I mean that in the way of, like,
I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah, like, a rock band that Peter Quinn is, like, or Peter Quill, I forget.
Peter Quill.
That Peter Quill is into because it was probably the first, like, cassette he got as a kid, right? It, like, adds character and texture to the world. And even though I just said the songs are, like, a shitty 80s band or whatever, it sounds like there's a certain verisimilitude to the songs that make them really fun to just listen to. Like, this totally seems like a third album in some, like, band's discography. But, you know, they recorded this in, like, 2020, in 2021, you know? Like, the fact that the fact is, you, like, similar, like, I think they did a better job than even necessarily, like, you know, the old Homestar Runner act, like Limousine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think they succeeded in ways that Limousine wants to aspire to. You could put Star-Lord songs on, like, 80s classic rock radio or whatever, and no one would blink an eye.
Well, to be fair, was kind of also the point that you couldn't do that with Limousine. And, for example, songs like Feed the Children's, which has no lyrics except for Na Na and Zuzu.
Sure.
They weren't exactly trying to trick you.
Yeah. Sure. But what I'm saying is, like, that was just kind of like my touchstone. Like,
I guess my example for that would be like Double Dragon Neon, which is a fantastic soundtrack, but also, like, it is very clearly a 2010s or 2000s composer doing 80s parody songs.
Sure.
Right. Like, I want to listen to the Star-Lord album on, like, a fucking cassette with, like, lower audio quality and, like, just, I don't know, put it on, like, a tape player, you know? Like, it is an astounding feat that they really didn't have to do it for their licensed music. And their licensed music choices are okay. They, you know, it's not necessarily anything to write home about, because it's just, like, a lot of, like, 80s, like, songs, but
it's what they did in the movies, so, yeah.
Like, there was precedent set by the movies. The fact that they have, like, ostensibly a full album of original music that sounds like that time period is super successful. And on top of that, rolling it into the narrative itself, like, giving more texture in, like, making Peter a much more interesting character because of it.
So the only game on here we haven't talked about now is Inscription. And Inscription is a game I feel very strongly about. It is a game that definitely caught me off guard and continues to catch me off guard as I play it. It is a roguelike deck builder And already it is setting you up for a surprise when it doesn't suck after hearing those words.
Right. I mean, I don't, I think Inscription is really fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, like, I think about the work of the, like, game developer beforehand, like, Pony, like, their previous work was, like, what was it, Pony Island.
Pony Island.
Like, he does a lot of stuff about, like, subverting expectations and stuff. Not that Inscription doesn't necessarily belong. I was just like, oh, another game by that guy? Cool. I'm intrigued. And they're doing some cool stuff, too.
Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, listen, I haven't played Pony Island, but also, I haven't played Pony Island, right? I'm like, oh, it's an arcade machine about ponies, but it's possessed by the devil. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. I don't fucking care. Maybe it's really good. But the pitch just put me off so hard. Inscription is so much more interesting than that, and it's a horror game, but it's so, I feel like it manages to combine the feel of, like, the good part of, like, the roguelike deck builder. It has RPG elements. It has, like, point and click, like, mystery uncovering and poking at things you didn't realize you could.
Locked room mysteries as well, like classic Flash games, like The Room, or I mean, like The Room series. There was another, like, basically escape room stuff, like, that incorporates elements of escape rooms. Like, I love the idea that, like, a lot of this, like, dialogue is delivered pretty naturally too, where, like, your cards are, like, talking to you and giving you, like, bits of story as well, like the weasel card being like, the stoat card.
Mm-hmm.
The stoat card being like, hey man, you've been through this before. We can break out of this cycle, right?
And then you get some, I don't want to spoil too much, obviously, but, like, you get other elements of the game that communicate. And there's, like, one of them, you get a new card and the stoat's like, oh Jesus, not him.
Right. It is really charming. I really love its art style. It has a creepy, tense atmosphere. Inscription is really cool. Of what I've played of it, it's really great. I'm just wondering if it'll necessarily, if I'm just putting this out there, I'm just wondering if it'll get its due in another category on this list.
Well, I mean, I guess two things. One, I don't know. And two, it kind of doesn't, like, if it was the best surprise and it was also going to win Game of the Year, it's like, well, it's still the best surprise.
Sure. I was just putting that out there.
Yeah, I think for me, the cut here is either First Soldier or Petal Crash. And I'm guessing it's First Soldier.
Yeah, I think First Soldier is really cool. I think I do want it to come to console so I can play that. But, you know, like, as, like, surprising as it is that it's not shit or whatever, I think we have another Square Enix game that is surprisingly not garbage on this list that wins this category.
What if there was a Guardians of the Galaxy Battle Royale on phones and it was good?
That would be wild.
Right.
You would be like, we are definitely living in a simulation.
Right. But, like, I just remember, like watching Jen play Guardians, I would sit down on the couch and watch her play it, and I was like, this is, like, really good. There's a lot of really interesting mechanics, like, at play here, but also, like, yeah, sometimes the characters get a little annoying, but the thing is, it's selling the idea that, like, these people are kind of annoyed with each other because they're in, like, a tiny ship just going through the galaxy constantly in debt, right? And so they're bickering at each other. But you still have moments in which they have genuine, like, heart-to-hearts with one another, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, a certain vulnerability that not even, like, the, like, I kind of like that first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, but you never got the sense that, like, the core four or five characters really cared about each other on any level of, like, oh, we can get along really well and do jobs together. Like, the Guardians in this game actually give a shit about each other, even in those moments in which they have, like, fallouts. And there's, like, a really great scene in which, in Guardians, like, the team kind of breaks up for a bit, and Peter is just wandering around the city listening to his cassette tape, and you can just kind of sit there and look at the cityscape and listen to this song as he's, like, wallowing in his own feelings, right? And it's, like, there's, like, a heart there that you wouldn't necessarily expect, because, again, that 30 to 45-minute presentation at E3 conveyed none of that. Like, it had...
Yeah, every minute of that presentation made me like it less.
Right. It had none of the charm, had none of the, like, interesting things that you could do in that game, or just small moments, you know? Like, it is an absolute achievement of, like, it is... Like, my push for it being, like, the best surprise is that, again, there is no reason it should be as good or even great as it is.
I mean, there's no reason it should be tolerable.
Mm-hmm. Because it's
Let's be frank. Like, this is a Square Enix, like, licensed game.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be basically Mass Effect, which we all know how we feel about Mass Effect these days. Mm-hmm. Even Jen knows, even though she has some bizarre compulsion. And it's following Avengers, which was crap, and it's about some of the most obnoxious characters from the MCU.
Right.
And they spent half an hour making it look worse and worse all the time. Like, honestly, if this game had come out and someone had said it, like, if it started becoming widely known that it bricked consoles, I wouldn't have been surprised. Like, and then it turns out it's, like, a very good game. Again, I still don't believe you.
Also surprising, like, just another thing that, like, shocked me about this game is, like, not only does it have, like, this is, like, such a small thing, but it shows that there was a real love and care put into this game. The accessibility features on this game are spectacular. You can adjust so many little minute things on the fly to make sure that you are able to play this, you know, AAA game, right? And yeah, sometimes it doesn't entirely work. Like, if you put the text at its largest size, like, the text wrapping gets a little weird on the screen. But if you drop it down from extra large to large, you still have, like, really decent, really readable subtitles, like, even during some of the most chaotic action sequences, and it works. And, like, you can adjust difficulty, auto-aim, like, so many little details, so that if you're the type of person who just wants to fucking play the Guardians of the Galaxy, like, for just its story, you can. Or if you're interested in its mechanics, you can engage with that challenge as well. And it, like, it's written in, like, very plain language, has, like, very good, like, example texts and things like that, to show you all the things that you're changing, and you can always go back and change it again on the fly. It is got a level of polish that's actually, like, you know, the thing that AAA games are really good at is polishing things to a mirror shine. And God, it's actually genuinely funny at parts. Like, there's some, like, decent jokes and goofs in there.
Yeah, like, after the first mission or something, there's, like, a mini fridge in the main area, and door is always, like, somewhat... its door is basically broken, so it's constantly opening up again. It doesn't tell you to do this, but you just keep going up to it and closing it, and eventually characters start taking notice, like, oh, you're really determined to try and keep our drinks cool, huh? Thank you.
And then, like, you call over the rocket to, like, fix it, and he basically tells you to go pound sand because he's working on, like, an engine or something. Because it's like, I do not have the time or energy to deal with your stupid bullshit fridge, Peter. Even though it's the community fridge. And it's like, the space within the ship that they're on feels lived in and interesting and is, like, full of, like, little details. And, you know, if you've ever shared a space with anybody for any extended period of time, everybody has that, like, shitty mini fridge that, like, never closes properly. That's just, like, an aspect of living together with a group of people.
Yeah. Sounds like you live like a slob, Curie.
Oh, yes, yes. Obviously.
I'm sorry, but you did, like, I'm just saying what the audience is thinking. You did just kind of out yourself. You're just like, everybody has that one toilet no one flushes, right? Like, no, Curie, that's not true.
That's not what I said. You are putting words in my mouth. What I'm saying is that it's relatable, that there are problems sometimes that even with a group that you don't necessarily want to fix because you're all focused on different things.
Hey, Kyrie.
What?
When you run out of toilet paper, do you replace the roll right away?
Yes.
I don't believe you.
I keep rolls in the drawer next to the like toilet so that I can replace it immediately. Six.
You're like it's just one of those things about living together. The toilet paper can't be replaced. It can't be done. We just all have to work together to overcome this.
Shut up. I'm trying to make a point.
You've made your point. Congratulations to Guardians of the Galaxy for winning Best Surprise with runners-up Inscription and Petal Crash.
Yeah, overall, I'm pretty happy with this list.
See, and Jen was in here being like, I don't think I have a horse in this one. Like, yeah, you do. Be quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got me there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm making the same complaints about Game of the Year, and then I'm sure I'll put up some stupid fight when we get there.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back with more awards, more debates, more friendly ribbing, I would expect. And until we are, peace out.
See ya.
Later.